Welcome to The Expert Vet. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Donna Spector in Chicago, who is The Expert Vet. She's a board-certified veterinary internist here to help explain medical conditions in dogs and cats. If you'd like to hear more episodes of this show or any of the Pet Talk radio shows I co-host with experts, please go to RadioPetLady.com and visit the podcast libraries. And I'd love to meet you at the Dog Film Festival in New York City, October 2nd and 3rd. Go to dogfilmfestival.com to learn more. The Expert Vet is a production of 8 Paws LLC and Dr. Donna Spector, which are solely responsible for its content and are proud to bring you this PSA about the catnip allergy study. Are you allergic to cats? Does your cat or the cat of a friend or family member cause you to sneeze or get itchy, watery eyes? If so, you may be qualified to participate in catnip, a clinical study of an investigational drug combined with allergy shots. Researchers are screening cat allergic individuals at their study sites in Los Angeles, Denver, Chicago, Baltimore, Chapel Hill, Seattle, and Madison. If you're allergic to cats and interested in learning more about the catnip study, go to www.catallergystudy.org. This show is brought to you with the generous support of Halo Holistic Natural Cat and Dog Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. And their new grain-free recipes, like Vigor, give you even more healthy choices for your pet's dinner, while Daily Greens bring vitamins and digestive enzymes into your dog's diet. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they emphasize giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com for pets awaiting a forever home. Well, Dr. Donna, you're going to become yet again a star of the cyber airwaves. You're part of this Happy Healthy Summit, which is a pretty interesting online teaching course, I guess. Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's exactly that. I mean, it's a group of individuals within the pet industry. So people who are talking about grooming, training, nutrition, exercise, healthy lifestyle, you know, so there's veterinarians, there's, you know, behaviorists, there's all sorts of,
nice.
You know, kind of pet specialists, if you will. It kind of reminds me of your radio shows, the group of people you
yes.
have, but it's like they're coming together in one
nice.
Online summit. And it runs from October 26th to November 2nd. And as a pet owner, registration is free. You can just pop on there and
wow.
register, and you can hear any of the talks. And there is a schedule that will start being posted, you know, this weekend, as far as who's speaking on what days. I'm actually speaking on Thursday, the 29th, about the pet food industry, trends in pet food, achieving ideal optimal health with nutrition, you know, so that's what I'm talking about, right up my alley.
Yeah, and mine, and a lot of the listeners of this show.
But there are 25 plus experts in the pet industry in different areas that are just, you know, teaching you the best ways to help your dogs, you know, live the wonderful lives they deserve.
That's really a really great idea. Now, people can only listen at the designated time? Like, your talk is almost like you're giving a lecture and people have to
right.
to log in at that
so,
time?
No, you do have access to it after the session is over. And I know there are probably some, you know, there probably you have to pay for certain things after the fact. I mean, obviously, you know, I don't know all the nuts and bolts about it. So just, you know, there is a link. I've actually written blog posts on it on Halo's website. People can look through. They can register for free using my link. And then, but once the summit has already passed, it will continue to be promoted. And you can get on and you can still listen to the archived podcasts and webinars, if you will.
Okay, so I always want to see who's putting on summits. Now, you mentioned Halo, but I blog for Halo, and you're the veterinary advisor for Halo, but Halo's not putting on this Happy Healthy Summit.
No. Mm-mm.
So who is? I'm always curious who's the wizard behind the curtain.
The wizard behind the curtain, and you know, I'm going to have to pull it up here and look really quick.
See, you're not that clear either, which is kind of interesting because usually a company wants to brand something as being theirs.
We're working with it's actually a company that does, I mean, honestly, they do these summits. That's their
business. I'll be darned.
And it's called Health Talks Online.
I'll be darned.
And, you know, and then they're, you know, but like as far as who the actual mastermind is, but this Health Talks Online is who is putting on the summit. And they do have some, obviously they have
sponsors,
you know, they have hosts and sponsors. Yeah, but they're hosting it. But they have, yeah, they have sponsors, but this is their business, this Health Talks Online. And they don't just do dogs, you know, I mean, they do human health topics. They have, you know, but yeah, it's health talks.
Interesting.
Online.
The reason why I ask is sometimes a company, it's their thing, and then somehow their messaging is woven through it, or you can only talk about things that they okay. And that's not your style.
No.
I mean, you're like me. We're both very outspoken about what we know and what we believe based on it. And we can't really be, you know, trained to sit, stay, according to someone
right.
else. So I think
right.
to a listener, to a pet owner, if that's true of you, then it's true of all the participants. Mm-hmm. And it would mean that that summit has more actual value because you're
yeah,
hearing from those people.
By one company.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's not put on. There's no vested interest.
Right.
If you will. So,
right. So basically,
yeah.
people are going to, they're going to read about this in the newsletter, and then they're going to go to the link that you're going to give me mm-hmm. to register, and they can hear you on Thursday, October 29th, and probably have access to it after the fact. It
yeah,
may
definitely.
Cost something.
Yeah, they definitely have access to it after the fact as well.
So, yeah, because everyone can't be at each of these mm-hmm. places, be at a computer at exact or a device at exactly the right, right. time. But right. I do think it's great that they chose you. I think good picking on their part. So if they pick somebody as quality as you, I'm hoping that the other kinds of experts are equally quality and that people will glean some valuable nuggets of info from
mm-hmm.
it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about something a little less jolly, which is splenic tumors, tumors on your dog's spleen, something that I not only have never luckily experienced or even heard much about, and you unfortunately have discovered is pretty darn common in older dogs. So we'll be right back. This is yet another thing to be aware of, like the long list of things that can go wrong, but at least you'll catch it early. We'll be right back after this quick break. The Radio Pet Lady Network is brought to you in part by Spot Platinum, an allergy test to determine which elements in your dog's environment or diet may be causing his scratching or licking. Spot Platinum can detect allergies for which they can make a USDA-approved oral spray custom-tailored to your dog's specific needs to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done more than 500,000 allergy tests over 25 years. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. Support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog or puppy is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. Shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones and avoid unnecessarily over-vaccinating dogs. VaxaCheck for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxaCheck for cats is coming soon. Dr. Donna, talk about tumors on the spleen. When you proposed that as a topic for a show, I was like, isn't that pretty rare?
Oh, gosh. No, it's not rare.
Oh, dear.
You know, and again, I have to always paint my picture of, you know, that I'm an internal medicine specialist. So I often, you know, I don't want to say I'm seeing the worst of the worst, but like, you know, this is not an uncommon occurrence
right.
in my. So let me just, I counted up my cases this year and now, you have to understand, I'm in this clinic that I'm currently, where I counted up my cases, I'm in that clinic 2 days a week, okay?
Very only little, very little.
2 days a week.
In Chicago.
And in the last year, I had 14.
Wow.
Of
that's
these
a
patients.
Lot.
Okay, so, you know, so it's not rare. It's something, and I want to also back up just a touch and say, this, so the tumors on the spleen, this is primarily a large breed dog disease. So the most common tumor on the spleen is the hemangiosarcoma. So that, you know, we've talked about that a number of times in different shows, and it is one of the most malignant tumors that we have in veterinary medicine. It affects large breed dogs. And the real kicker about it is the most common history that we get from a pet owner is it looks like arthritis.
Really?
Oh, my dog's kind of slowing down.
Really?
Is kind of slowing down. You know, if he's real active at the dog park, then the next day he's not, you know, he's just down. He doesn't want to get up. He doesn't want to stand. He pants a lot. He's painful. I can tell I overdid it at the park. And then that history goes on. And then, you know, the 2 or 3 days later, he was perfectly fine again. And then it waxes and wanes like that. And what's happening in these dogs is as these splenic tumors grow, they will bleed And so a lot of times with activity, vigorous activity, or just randomly because they'll bleed, these dogs will become very lethargic, very dumpy, very blah, and then they auto transfuse themselves. They bleed into the belly cavity, and then they absorb it all again, and within a couple of days, they're back to normal.
Whoa. Now, we know that internal bleeding, at least we've been told, is very painful.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and this is coming. This happens because of a tumor on the spleen. And whenever you have a tumor in an organ that stretches the capsule of the organ, that also can be very painful.
Now, can you back up and do a little anatomy for us? We kind of know that you can live without your spleen. People in car accidents with abdominal trauma, their spleen often is removed. So, but where does it live near the liver? What does it do? Yep.
So the spleen is a really funny organ that it you're right, you can indeed live without it. It essentially is a reservoir of blood. So it holds, at any given time, it can hold 20 or 30% of your blood volume. So
oh my
it's a
God.
Big blood holder.
Woo.
Lots of blood vessels, real vascular, and it's it is a really crucial part of your immune system. It has a lot of immune cells in it, and it stores antibodies, and the spleen kind of picks out, like if you've got infectious disease, your spleen kind of picks out the infectious particles. So it functions as an immune organ as well as a blood reservoir or blood holder. It runs in large part along the left-hand side of the body. So the liver comes first. That's way up in almost near the chest cavity.
Right.
Stomach is below that. The spleen kind of lays against the left flank.
Okay.
And it can even go along the belly itself, and even like a little triangle of it can be up on the right hand side. So it kind of like lays along the left side or superficially across the belly is where it, and it's just a really thin organ. Usually it's very thin and it's
interesting,
kind of, you know, it's oblong in shape. So the history we often get of these older, and it's usually an older large breed dog, is the waxing and waning history of lethargy, overdoing it, painful from arthritis. Almost every client I've ever dealt with that had a splenic tumor, the dog had this quote-unquote history of slowing down lethargy arthritis. And because that's exactly what's happening, as the splenic tumor grows, it can bleed. It bleeds full out into the belly, and then they're really lethargic and dumpy. They reabsorb the blood, and on they go. And it is the... when we see a large breed Labrador retriever, say, with a big splenic mass, you know, it's very easy to jump the gun because we, you know, it's just like, oh, this dog has a hemangiosarcoma, which is the most common malignant tumor on the spleen. And it's kind of like 1 + 1 = 2. I mean, it's always been, oh, you've got this dog, he's bleeding, he's got blood in the belly, he's, you know, he's got this big mass on the spleen. This is a very, you know, hemangiosarcoma is a very, very malignant cancer. And, you know, even if we take out the spleen, we take your dog to surgery, we take out the spleen, you know, he's likely going to have this cancer has already spread at this point. They need chemo. I mean, it's a really grim, grim prognosis for splenic hemangiosarcoma. But the reason I say don't jump the gun is because of those 14 patients that I saw in this last year, 6 of them did not have hemangiosarcoma.
It was just a tumor, but not a cancerous tumor.
Right.
Wow.
50%. So up to 50% of these large breed older dogs are not going to have cancer. It's not going to be hemangiosarcoma in that spleen.
So in other words, your own vet does what? An abdominal ultrasound or x-ray, sees a tumor, maybe even sees the blood pooling in the cavity, and jumps to the conclusion that it's hemangiosarcoma, which is a cancerous tumor, whereas just a tumor is not called hemangiosarcoma, right? It's just a tumor.
The mass, the other types of things that can happen in the spleen and still cause it to look like a mass are benign. They're called, the biggest one we see is called lymphoid, because remember I said the spleen is a big immune organ.
Yes, yes.
The lymph cells. It's lymphoid hyperplasia. So it's like the spleen is like flexing its lymph muscles, and it creates this little teeny spot initially of overgrowth of tissue, and then that, as it can continue to grow over time, and it can be, so the last mass, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about Rocco. Rocco is, and he still is, a 12-year-old neutered male golden retriever. And He had been vaccinated about 2 weeks before he started having problems. He got a vaccine, and he also had some skin infection, so he went on an antibiotic. And
you know that I'm going to want to go back to what was he vaccinated for. You know we're not going to get by that one easy. Go ahead.
So then 2 weeks later, he comes in. He's bleeding from the nose. He's got blood.
Ooh.
He's got little blood spots all over his body, everywhere, bleeding from the nose, bleeding from everywhere. He's super anemic.
You mean the blood's coming out of his skin?
Yeah, but just keep listening.
Okay, so, I am, but I'm just trying to get a picture.
We did blood work on him, and he has a critically low platelet count. The platelet is a blood clotting cell.
Okay.
And if you have low platelets, you can, you know, you'll start bleeding everywhere. You'll bleed out of your nose.
Oh, my God.
Your skin, you know, everywhere.
God.
You get all these little bruises all over your skin. And the next step in this aged dog is like, oh, no, because you've heard of like this immune-mediated thrombocytopenia, this immune-mediated platelet disorder. One of the big things that can stimulate is if you have cancer anywhere in your body. So lo and behold, Rocco gets an X-ray taken of his chest and of his belly, and he has a ginormous splenic mass. He has a ginormous mass on his spleen. And the veterinarian initially sent him over to the emergency clinic, and they're like, oh my gosh, we're going to have to get the spleen taken out if there's any hope for Rocco. I mean, fast forward, very long, drawn out process. But at the end of the day, we figure that Rocco had a reaction to his vaccine, causing a low platelet problem, like a low platelet anemia problem. And we did stabilize him, and then we took him to surgery, and his mass and his spleen was benign. And it just
Who was the one who said, hang on, 2 weeks ago he had a vaccination? Who was it?
So
you?
That's where I came into the picture.
Yeah.
So, but you know, what they told me was so impactful to me because Rocco's owner said, when I showed up at the specialty emergency hospital, and they worked with a board certified surgeon, and right up to the day of surgery, after we had gotten his platelet count stabilized, gotten his anemia improved, and they were sitting in there for the consultation with the board certified surgeon, and the surgeon said, yeah, if you really want to do this, but I suspect that all these problems he's been having is because he's had, you know, he has cancer in his spleen.
Right.
And as long as you know, he's only going to live a couple months after surgery, then I'm fine to do the surgery. And they were very discouraged, and they almost didn't go through with it. And they called me that day as they were sitting in the,
God.
Do it. You still have to do it. Like, do the surgery because he has all these other variables. He could have had a low platelet count from the vaccine or from the antibiotic he was taking.
Right.
Or something else. And, you know, in this particular time, it was right, you know, that we didn't jump the gun. The mass was benign, and that's why it had gotten to such huge proportions. When it came out of there, that mass was 13 inches.
Oh, my God.
In diameter. I mean, it was this
bigger than the spleen, from what you're describing the spleen as being like.
Yeah. And so, you know, in his case, that mass got to be that huge because it was benign. And he wasn't bleeding inside his belly like we sometimes see those dogs when their masses rupture. He was bleeding from like an unassociated platelet problem that happened from probably a vaccine or antibiotic reaction. And, you know, so there were like all these moving parts. But the other veterinarians they were working with were so focused on this mass and that fact that he's a 12-year-old golden retriever. He can't have anything other than cancer.
And you've talked about that. You had a patient some time ago where you're totally focused on the one disease that either they do have or that they probably have, and not stepping back and thinking, I don't know everything yet. There's other things at work, right?
So I just want to encourage pet owners listening to not jump the gun. And you're right. At the end of the day, there's going to be 50% of those dogs that do have cancer. But you've taken away the immediate risk, which is removing the bleeding mass. And even if you have just a few months, at least they're feeling good.
Right. And you have your goodbye. You're not doing an emergency euthanasia where you feel so incomplete and unresolved and you never really knew what it was. And you're full of guilt and confusion.
Right.
You have some time to do a proper goodbye. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about vaccine reaction. I know that, you know, we've talked about it before. My Maisie was 24 hours in the ER just on her first Lyme vaccination, not the second one, which you said is the one that would have given her a big reaction. I just want to talk about what vaccines a 12-year-old Rocco might have been getting, and 2 weeks later, how soon were there probably symptoms that might have been missed? How soon will we expect a vaccine reaction? We'll be right back after this quick message. This show is made possible in part by Precious Cat Litter, owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian in Colorado who has created many different low-dust litters for the health of all members of the family, cats or people with asthma and allergies. Precious Cat also makes litter for the special needs of many cats, from kitten-attract litter that helps youngsters develop good habits to cat-attract litter that helps those with out-of-litter box issues get back in the box. Precious Cat's Touch of the Outdoors litter provides environmental enrichment, bringing to indoor cats the natural scent of the outdoors from field grasses grown in their own fields. This show is also brought to you by Meow Space, a clear ventilated enclosure that can be a one cat feeding space, a litter box station, or even a safe place to nap, designed so that only one cat with a unique access device can enter the see-through box. Meow Space is made in the USA to solve out of litter box problems and individualized feeding needs in multi-cat households. Big enough for large cats to do their business or small dogs to eat their own food in peace, Meow Space benefits the whole family because it also keeps dogs and small children out of the litter box too. Go to meowspace.biz. That's meowspace.biz to see for yourself. We are back. I just want to say to people, I am not 100% against vaccines in any way. I've tried many different ones, not the core vaccines. I do titer testing with VaxaCheck with those, which is a great product. But I do think that we aren't as aware, you are, because you get the serious cases, that there can be reactions to vaccines that aren't life-threatening, but that need some kind of management. So what did Rocco get? Mm-hmm. What were the vaccines? And it was now 2 weeks later. Would there have been signs and symptoms earlier had they been on the alert for it?
No, I mean, that's a vaccine reactions can happen, you know, at any point. And
okay.
When you think of the most common vaccine reactions, that's things like low-grade fever,
right.
Lethargy, stiffness, joint pain, you know, those kinds of things. Those happen generally within the first 3 days.
Okay.
But when you start talking about immune-mediated vaccine reactions, where your immune system is triggered and, you know, and it starts destroying your own blood cells or your platelets or whatever it's doing, those reactions can happen even, you know, a month or more post, you know, post-vaccine. So that it's not an unusual time frame. But, you know, everything was kind of going the right way for Rocco. I mean, Rocco had come in for his annual exam, which
okay.
I want to come back to.
Okay.
He had come in for his annual exam, and he did get a rabies booster because he boards and, you know, and it's required by state.
Right,
and, he did
and that's the law.
Rabies.
That's the law.
He got his rabies vaccine, and they performed a titer for distemper and parvo. They didn't just give it to him.
That was good. That was very
was
responsible.
Good. So we're very excited
proud of them.
That.
Yes.
But then his titer came back negative for distemper and
like
parvo.
He had no theoretically no immunity to those two diseases.
Well, no immunity that the titers check for. And that again, that is then a conversation piece. Has this dog been vaccinated well his entire life up to this point? How many vaccines has he gotten? Is he likely to still be protected? What's his lifestyle? You know, all these things come into play when we say, should we or should we not
right.
be revaccinating a
right.
dog? And because there's also a big arm of the immune system, it's called the cell-mediated immune system, that the vaccine titer can't check for. So you can still have a dog with a negative titer, but they can still be protected if they're challenged with the virus because there's a whole arm of the immune system. There's two arms of the immune system. One is checked by a titer, and there's no test for the other one.
Got it.
It just doesn't exist.
Okay.
So once you reach a point where there's negative vaccine titers, it still is a conversation to have with your veterinarian. Should we rebooster? Should we not? This conversation happened. Everything really happened the right way, but the decision was made, you know what? He does board a lot.
Yes.
He does go. He's
yes.
in an environment where there are puppies, where, you know, who knows what the vaccine status is. So it was a decision.
Sounds to me like I would have, like if it were me, I would probably have said, yeah, he needs the protection.
So, I mean, that's it. They did it the right way.
Yes.
And it doesn't, and that's just the thing. Even when you're really responsible and you're having the conversations, you know what still happens sometimes.
Well, let me just say about the you know what that happens sometimes. I want to tell you guys something else you need to know. Unless you are at the poverty level and you have to go to a low-cost vaccine clinic, do never do that. Unless you cannot afford any other way to get your dog vaccinated, because if you go to your vet and you have the privilege of these conversations and you choose to vaccinate, what happened to me and what happened to Maisie, without any question, there was a fantastic vet. another board-certified internist who Dr. Spector actually knows, who got on the phone with me from the company that made that Lyme vaccine. They immediately paid my entire emergency 24-hour bill. No questions asked. There's no proof that it was from the vaccine. There's a high likelihood, and that's why you want the total protection of getting these things from a vet, because the companies behind them stand behind them. Blindly, absolutely 100%. They support the vet and the owner. They don't make you prove anything. They're like, if there's any chance it was from that, we'll take care of it. So I think that that's a really other important thing to know, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, we're going to take, do we take our second break? No, yes, we did take our second break.
Okay.
So I just want to make sure. So carry on about Rocco, but I think it's just important people understand there are safety nets.
Yeah, they did have the conversation. Things happened as they should. And, you know, but that's why the part of the history is so important, that knowing he had a vaccination, that there could be another cause for him to have the platelet disorder, not just cancer. So, you know, people listening, I think it's just, you know, my take home message is, you know, just, it's these splenic tumors 50% of the time can be benign. And, you know, hopefully your dog will fall on the side of a benign, not a malignant mass. But even if they do, there are benefits to taking that mass out. And the thing I wanted to point out about Rocco and the annual exam.
Yes.
So Rocco had his annual exam. Did I mention he's a 12-year-old neutered male golden retriever? He should have had screening x-rays.
Yes.
And they did a really nice job. They gave him his rabies shot. They drew blood work on him. And his blood was pristine. His blood showed no platelet problems, no anemia. Things were great on the blood work. They did a great, you know, they did everything. But, you know, they didn't do some screening x-rays. And the spleen can be very difficult to feel in a dog because, A, sometimes they're really tense. They tense up their belly. The spleen can actually shift because it's on a stalk. It can actually shift up under
Whoa.
The rib cage at times. So even though you're like, wow, there was this huge 13-centimeter.
How did we miss that, right?
How did we miss it? You know, it does happen. And so my point is that day, with normal blood work, normal platelets, normal no anemia, no nothing.
Right.
Had they done x-rays, they'd be like, wow, Rocco, you have a huge mass.
Right.
It would have been a more controlled approach.
Right.
To him. Still early detection, you know, part of that plan. We go in, you know, where then it became very muddled with, like, all this other stuff.
And a lot of emotion. Oh, my God, you want to put my dog to sleep. What do I do? No one's thinking as clearly. And the surgeon, board certified, doesn't want to, you know, take them down an unnecessary so-called surgery. So he's giving them the worst case, which, you know, wasn't even necessary. Two things that also brings to mind. One of them is that you and Dr. Sue, the pet cancer vet, urge people to get a chest and belly x-ray at yearly exams, and none of us does it, and our own vets do not recommend it. And we think, oh, an extra, pick a number, $125. It's something we're going to have to start really embracing as an idea. I haven't been doing it. At what age should that start? Every single exam, every single yearly for a younger dog?
Annual. So the, you know, they really should start when we start thinking of our patients as mature.
Right.
Or
so
even
two?
If you want, no. You know,
mature. Oh, you mean mature, older. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, for little small breed dogs, is that 8 years old? 8, 9,
okay.
Probably.
Yep.
And or larger breed dogs, is that 6, 7?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because when we start talking about true, you know, splenic masses, we're not seeing them generally in 4 and 5 year old dogs.
Right.
We're
right.
seeing them in 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, you know, I mean, we're seeing them in the, no one is going to be surprised when we say, oh, it's a 9 year old lab with a mass in its spleen. You're like, oh yeah. Okay. You know, I mean,
right,
like,
right.
It's like, you know, that's around the water cooler talk, you know, I mean, it happens so frequently.
Right.
So, you know, again, depending on the patient size, it does vary a little bit, but I, you know, definitely in the more mature to getting to be starting to be seniors.
Okay. So, then there's another part of that picture. You know, there's that thing that we all, those little so-called IQ tests that as kids, what's wrong with this picture? And you find a couple of things wrong with it. Like in your case, it's like they didn't do x-rays. In my case, it's like, wait a minute, 12 years old yearly? 12 years old, in theory, is every 6 months, but none of us does that either if the dog
right.
seems well.
But
speak to that.
X-rays generally,
just,
you know,
once a year?
X-rays
okay.
generally still annually, unless if there is an indication on, you know, you've also heard me talk about trending lab work. Do I think those dogs should have blood work done twice a year? Absolutely.
Because oh, boy.
If there is a slight decline of, like, say, they're a little more anemic.
Right.
Or they are showing elevated liver values, or they're showing elevated kidney values, you know, then that stimulates you know, to say, okay, something's changed here. We've watched the trend, very minor change, you know, whatever it is. And then you kind of proceed accordingly. But generally speaking, we still say annual, once annual x-rays of belly and chest.
But at 12 years old, you should be having a biannual physical twice a year. And that means the blood work, which is the pricey part of the exam. It's like $300-ish to get that full panel. It includes a urine and a fecal, which is, you know, to our minds, probably less important. But it is something that we're all kind of hopscotching over and waiting till our dog shows signs and symptoms. And I think the point is, again, that you could be catching these things before they get to the signs or symptom stages. I have one quickie I've got to ask before we finish up this show. It's a little story of a friend and a dog, and just what would you think of this? So he's got his 12-year-old lab who had a sore on like his elbow that just wouldn't heal. It was kept opening. And he was not happy with the vet he'd been seeing. So he went to, I'll call it a less expensive, but it's a brand, it's a chain of vets, a chain of vet clinics. It's across the country. They go by rote. I mean, I think those of people in the vet community know it's like managed. It is managed care. It's HMO. It's like Kaiser Permanente. Mm-hmm. The vets do what they are told to do on a chart. And I understand that a lot of vets come fresh out of vet school into these clinics often. Point being, they do a surgery on this, what turns out to be actually benign. I said, you got to have it looked at. Turns out to be benign, but they send him home, and this is the first indication things weren't done properly. So heavily still anesthetized 7 or 8 hours later that it takes two men to lift the dog back in the car from the home and take him back and say, what have you done? So that is a really bad thing. I mean, when any procedure is done, am I right that a dog must be able to walk out of a clinic, maybe a little wobbly, but be able to walk out on his own?
Yes.
Okay, this dog was unable to raise his head. Right. Within days, it became clear that that limb, which had had zero lameness of any kind, that somewhere down in the foot area, I'm guessing it's neurological, that something during the surgery had been nicked, a nerve, a something, and now that leg is of no use to the dog. The dog cannot get out of the car because he can't land on that foot, and it kind of folds under. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing, if damage is done, neurological damage is done to a limb at any point in the limb and winds up like that, there's really nothing you can do, right?
Yeah, I mean, if it is indeed, you know, neurologic, yeah.
I mean, what else could it be?
Yeah, well, you know, and how long ago was, did it was, is he after the procedure?
Oh, now it's up to, like, call it 2 months.
Yeah. No, I mean,
it got worse and worse. And I said to him, no, this is not a tendon that's cut. Then no. It would have been immediate. This is nerve damage, and now there's no nerve signal going to the foot or to the ankle or, for all I know, the knee. And so that leg cannot follow, you know, brain information. So I don't know what to say. I mean, I want to say, God, we should all use a board-certified surgeon, but that's sort of crazy because taking a lump off, you don't need a soft tissue surgeon specialist. You don't need a board-certified surgeon, right? You can just have bad luck.
Yeah,
I guess.
You know, and absolutely you can. And, you know, and that's also like, how well do you know your veterinarian? It's a conversation.
Right.
Have you done these procedures? It's just like how we investigate
our own medical care.
Our own medical, you know, it's like, what's your comfort level with the clinic, with the doctor, with their experience? And if it's not, then, you know, but yes, sometimes things do just happen. And, you know, restraint for a dog under anesthesia, you know, sometimes it's the way the leg is positioned and, you know, the damage actually can occur, like, say, up in the armpit or the groin, depending on how the leg is twerked a little bit, if you will, or overextended. I mean, you know, things can happen and that, but it all comes down to still experience and procedure and
in human medicine, the youngest surgeons are fresh out of medical school, but there's an attending senior surgeon at their elbow while they're doing it,
and in vet
medicine, it's often just the young doctor learning and sometimes learning on your dog. Would you think that hydrotherapy, swimming, warm swimming with an actual PT person, is there any value to that once you've lost the sensation to the foot?
Generally not.
No, right? That's
what I thought. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, no, so, you know, this is not to cause alarm, but just, you know, to say bad things can happen. There really is no malpractice, and I don't believe in suing myself. I don't believe in suing doctors because things do just happen. But I do believe that he should go back to that clinic and say, I gave you a dog that walked very nicely on all four legs and just wanted a lump off, I would like all my fees refunded. I don't know what else to say to him, but I think that that's a reasonable thing to say. At least make me whole financially because my dog is not whole anymore.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, he obviously can also, you know, request referral to neurologist to orthopedic.
Well, they did. You know, he had been told by someone to go to a neurologist, but what's a neurologist going to tell you? You got nerve damage.
Right. But, you know, I mean, just as a,
Oh, I see. For them to take care of it. Well, it's an imperfect world we live in, but we're trying to do the best we can to arm people with all the advice and information we can. Dr. Spector, thank you so much and look forward to hearing you on the Happy Healthy Summit this week. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.